Second, by 5 p.m., KABU is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Forgotten Island PDX on Friday, March 13th from 7 to 10:30 p.m. at New Expressive Works in Portland. Forgotten Island PDX is a hybrid film screening, concert, and sound performance centered around the aftermath of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. Again, that's Forgotten Island PDX on Friday, March 13th from 7 to 10:30 p.m. at New Expressive Works, 810 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm at the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for the Dirt Bag. Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. And not beside me is Jim Gilbert, who is at home, and our ace engineer will soon get him on the phone, and we will be off. He's working on that right now. I can see that. A full show nonetheless. And when Jim gets here, we will talk about the Home Orchard Society, which has one of its two big events this Sunday, the Fruit Propagation Fair, 10 to 4 at the Canby Fairgrounds, the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby. We'll talk about that in a moment. Also, I'm going to spend just a little more time with our plant of the month on fava beans. We've talked about fava beans in the past, and I've gotten calls about, well, what, where do you get them and whatnot, but I'll specifically be talking about the difference between the cover crop fava beans and the regular fava beans. At half past the hour, we'll have our garden stumper, and yes, so we'll get to this right after we get Jim on the line here. What's annoying Glenn this month. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Jim's with us now. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Glenn.
Glad you could make it. I had an additional hurdle that I had to find your phone number because I forgot my phone at home. So that's why we were a little late in getting a hold of you there. So I called my wife, who graciously came back to the house from her morning walk and gave me your number. So,
well, thanks to Ann.
Yes, indeed. We made it work in any event. So Jim is a little bit under the weather, but not enough that's going to keep him from sharing his wisdom.
Yeah, it was a tough call, Glenn. I really wanted to come, and, you know, there's this virus going on. This is not the really big virus, but the smaller virus that's been going around, and just out of caution, and I certainly, I don't think you can catch it by talking on the phone, hopefully.
Well, maybe you could wipe down a couple of times through the the show. Yes, and we're glad that you're willing to make it. Yeah, and you said, or to talk with us. You said that you have kind of a sore throat, and I believe that's not one of the symptoms of this the new virus. So it's probably not that.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope not, because certainly don't want anybody else to get it.
Indeed.
It's great to be here with you, Glenn.
Yes. Well, let's start off by talking about the Fruit Propagation Fair.
Yes.
Happening Sunday.
This coming Sunday. That's where all the fruit nuts will be gathered.
It's not a two-day affair, a one-day affair.
Yeah. It's Sunday from 10 to 4 at Clackamas County Fairgrounds in lovely Canby, Oregon. And, it's really a great event. I mean, if you like growing fruit and are interested in that and just want to talk to some people and hang out with some people that have been doing it for a long time here in the Pacific Northwest, is there's not a better place to go, in my opinion.
No, I agree. And just to hang around with like-minded people and much more knowledgeable people. And some of those guys in the Fruit Home Orchard Society have been in the business for 50 or more years. And you're one of them, yep. Jim. Not that I'm thinking you're going to be there, but...
Well, you're getting close.
That's right. But, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the person can go there. If you've taken your own cyan wood and want to have it grafted, then you can do that there, or you can go there with and just wander the aisles and see just an incredible variety of fruit varieties that you can actually, you know, you can take it home, or you can have them graft a tree for you right on the spot.
Yeah. And just for the price of admission, you get all of the scion wood for free.
That's right. You would pay
for the rootstock if you have one of them, us, build you a tree, but otherwise, price of admission. Or if you become a member, then free admission.
Right. And non-member admission is $7, and member is $5. And like you said, if you join, you get in for free. And
yeah,
take the whole family. They'll bring your kids, because it's a great place for kids to see, you know, what this is all about. I mean, it's kind of a, you know, a lot of people don't understand about grafting. We've talked about it quite a bit on the show, but in fact, last month the rootstock was our plant of the month, and here it is. You know, this is the mystery unveiled.
That's right, and there are other vendors there, from sharpening. Probably One Green World will be there, and the Home Orchard Society's Arboretum person will probably be there selling maybe mason bees as well.
Yeah,
as fruit socks.
And they have plants will be available from, I think, the Home Orchard Society, and certainly One Green World will be selling plants. And, you know, it's a great way to go and to have it all in one place. You can just go and talk to folks and get some plants or signs and continue on.
I don't have it in front of me if there is a speaker schedule this Sunday. Do you know if they're doing that this time?
Well, I was just on the website and I didn't see anything. If there's a listener out there that knows more about that, they'd probably let us know. But I'm going to go back and just one more time here. Let's see.
That's the benefit of being home there, Jim. You can...
I know.
Also, while Jim's looking up there, and if a listener did have more information on that, they could give us a call. Well, in this case, me, but I got my ACE engineer there. 503-231-8187. And that is also the number to call if you have a gardening question. Anything that might be happening this time of year.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't see anything, Glenn, about speakers.
Okay.
I think they do the speakers in the fruit, all about fruit show.
That could be when there's a 2-day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So once again, the fruit propagation fair, the Clackamas County Fairgrounds, this Sunday in Canby, 10 to 4. Yep.
Don't miss it.
That's right. I will not be there. I usually am. To help staff the advice table, but I've got another gig about the same time, so I will be doing that.
Yeah, there will be, I'm sure will be lots of good people there to give advice to.
Oh yes, there's never a shortage of that.
Right.
Goodbye. Okay. All right, well, let's move on here then to our plant of the month, fava beans. And I want to just recap that there's a difference between the two. I should mention that all or both varieties, or all the varieties of fava beans, are edible, but some are hardly worth it. And those ones that are hardly worth it are the smaller ones, sometimes called banner, the variety banner fava beans, and those are used mostly for cover crops, because it is a or those plants are more erect. They can go from 3 to 6 feet tall and will produce seed pods eventually that will have 3 or 4 little beans in them, but small and hardly worth the effort to get them ready to eat. And they're not as tasty as the larger ones. So, you know, in this case, large is good. And this is not a cooking show, so I'm not going to talk to you about the cooking, but the cover crop fava beans, actually both fava beans, are pretty hardy. Some research that I did said hardy to about 10 degrees. I've had them die at warmer temperatures than that, but nevertheless, they're thriving now. And they'll probably even survive. Boy, I saw a forecast for Portland of next week, some lows in the around 27. So that
really
could, yeah, but
sure, that's not Portland, Maine, right?
pretty sure, you know. But different apps have different forecasts and whatnot. So we've got plenty of days to pass by before that happens too. But colder temperatures, even Friday, Saturday, you know, highs not even to 45.
Wow.
So we've got some colder weather for this time of year.
Yeah, I hope, you know, one of the things that's happening right now are a lot of the fruit trees are starting to bloom.
Yeah.
Especially like peaches and our apricot project out here, a lot of apricots are blooming, and so that kind of temperature would not be desirable.
No. Get the smudge pot going, if anybody does that anymore.
Right. Probably not.
Okay. And one last... Go ahead.
I think a solar-powered...
Oh, yeah. Right. One last thing on fava beans, that both of them are nitrogen fixers, too. So with the help of what we call rhizobacteria in the root zone... around plant the bacteria, the fava bean roots, they will take nitrogen from the air that's in the soil and convert it into a form that's usable to not the fava bean plant, but to other plants when that plant dies. So fava beans all the way around. So it's a good thing. Fava beans are good if you want to eat them. Plant at one that's designed for that. Okay, we have a call. Good morning. Roger, Roger was on the line. Took too long to get to Roger. In any event, let's start our musical selections here. These are somewhat related, but not totally related. The first one is related. I couldn't find a song that had green beans in it, because the fava beans are kind of green, but this is a song called Red Beans from Professor Longhair. Okay. And we're on here again?
Hey, this is Roger.
Okay, Roger. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yes. Thanks. Thanks for taking the call, of course.
Yep.
This is my first winter that I've planted a variety of cover crop. I've got about 30 feet, 4 by 30 foot raised bed sort of area, and I've cover cropped it with... rye and also clover, but I just realized I don't really know what to do now or when to do anything. Yeah. And wondering what your opinion is of what's the timing for the next step.
Well, you have one legume, which is the clover, and one knot, the rye.
Yeah.
And for me, what I always recommend, but this also depends on what you're going to do with that bed, so maybe I should find that out first. What's your plan? What are you going to plant there?
Well, mixed vegetables, I guess, would be the easiest way to put it. I'm a little bit open, but I usually try a variety of food crops, of course. Anything from onions, carrots, broccoli, some zucchini.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would treat the two of those things differently than just about everything else, and that's the onions and the carrots. For that, I would probably pull out the cover crop and not have the tangle of roots left in the ground. But for the other things, broccoli or tomatoes or zucchini or just kind of everything else that you're not going to be planting seeds close to each other or transplanting in things close to each other, what I recommend is just cutting the plants off at ground level, which will kill them. But in the case of the clover, we'll leave the nitrogen right in the soil and you won't be disturbing the soil. And then for the plants that you're going to be planting every foot or 2 feet, whatever, just prepare that hole. Just the hole for planting there. You don't need to rototill or do anything else to the whole bed. Just where you're going to plant it. You know, that might be a foot in diameter.
Okay, great. I was thinking that there's less enthusiasm about turning the soil or rototilling.
So, but for that area or the crops that you will be seeding, beets or onions or carrots, then you know it just doesn't work so well because you need soil to come in contact with the seed, and it's just they're close to each other. I mean, fairly close when you plant them, and then you'll thin them.
Yeah.
But that would be my recommendation, and that is exactly what I do.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much.
You bet.
Thanks.
Okay, Jim, you still with us?
Still here.
Okay, good deal. All right, where are we at here on the thing here? What are you doing out there on the farm now? I know you've been busy.
This is a busy time of year because we're shipping plants.
Oh yeah,
and also, you know, a lot of orders going out, plus a lot of propagating going on, both cuttings, grafting. A lot happening. And one thing I wanted to mention to the listeners, and it also sort of ties into the upcoming fruit propagation fair, is planting bare root trees. I don't know if we have time to talk about that, Glenn, but
sure.
It's still happening. I mean, the trees are for sale. Most nurseries, I know One Green World does, they keep the trees in a cooler so they stay dormant. And this time of year is a perfect time for it. Trees are this is very typical for just about every kind of fruit tree to get them in the ground. Now's the time to do it. And a couple of things I wanted to mention about that over the years, I've learned some things. You know, one thing is, despite all the advertising that one might see, I recommend when you plant a tree in the ground, you don't put anything else in the hole. Some people think like there's sort of that word anthropomorphism where you're going to treat the roots of that plant really nice, and put all sorts of stuff in the hole to make it happy and grow. But actually, the tree needs to be able to have get its roots stronger and go out into the surrounding soil. And if you make a nice little spot for it where the roots are, the roots will tend to stay there, which is not a good thing. And basically, when you dig a hole, you want to make a hole that's large enough for the root system, but not if you've got one long straggly root, which sometimes you have on a bare root tree, you can prune that off. You don't need to make a super big hole.
Would pruning it off be preferable to kind of wrapping it around in the hole?
Yes, because because wrapping it around will cause the root to go the wrong direction. You want the roots to all go out, not go in or up or different places. Mm-hmm. So I recommend pruning them off. And any broken roots, I would prune back to before the break. And and then the other very important thing in planting is to make sure the crown of the tree, you can see on most trees a change of color from soil to air, and that point on that tree should not be buried. It should be right at the same level as the soil surrounding it. And that's basically what I do. Sometimes I'll take a straight edge, some kind of stick or something across the planting hole,
uh-huh.
and just make sure and to make sure that I'm not planting it too deep. Some plants are very sensitive to planting too deep. They will die from it, and so it's really important to keep it there at that level.
And I had a question on something you said, that you're doing grafting and cuttings. What plants do you take cuttings from this time of year?
We're doing figs right now. That's hardwood cuttings of figs are one of the primary ones we do. We also propagate olives. We're doing some kiwis. Some of that's a little late. I mean, we sort of vary it back and forth. A lot of stuff we do in the fall, but hardwood cuttings are still possible to do if the plant is dormant. We do mulberries this time of year. They work well.
Okay.
So
this kind of ties in with one of our stumpers from months gone by about which fruit trees or fruit plants don't require grafting. And you just mentioned some of them there.
Yeah, that's true. And some things we graft, we actually do graft figs sometimes if we're trying to get a stock plant growing to get more cutting.
Uh-huh.
We can actually get a plant faster that way than if we stick the cutting, the hardwood cutting.
Oh, how about that? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. I can see where that would be beneficial.
Yeah, and we're pretty excited. I mean, figs are such a wonderful fruit, and we've gotten some newer varieties. We eventually will be offering and focused on again on the Pacific Northwest, the varieties that do well here. It's important.
Indeed. Well, at my farm, at least my home garden, I have planted peas, and, with this colder weather coming in right now, but I'm not sweating it, because I'll tell you the technique that I've used, and I've used this for years, and I've mentioned it here on the Dirt Bag before, but never hurts to remind people or to let you know for the first time. After I have prepared the bed and planted the pea seeds, I cover the row with small panes of glass. Maybe they might be 6 or 8 inches in width, and sometimes they're 2 feet in length, and sometimes they're square, and sometimes the glass is broken pieces. That just happens out there, which I don't like. And what this does is it creates a little greenhouse, mini greenhouse, right there in the soil. And when the sun comes out, boy, it really heats up the soil, and by being covered, it prevents the cold rain from cooling it down, and keeps it warm during the cooler nights that we have now. So I don't expect any problems with the cooler temperatures that we've got forecast, even if they're well below freezing. Pretty nice.
It would be really... Yeah, it would be surprising to me at this time of year to get temperatures in Portland below freezing. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see, but, our coldest temperature so far this year is out here in the country, and our frost pocket's been 22 degrees. That will be interesting.
Well, I saw a graphic on one of the weather forecasts, and it's got this big, purple color going down, and he said it'd even be down to the desert southwest that these cold temperatures would be going down to. And there's even a chance of snow on the, down to sea level here this weekend. I mean, not a big chance of it, but it'll be cold enough to do so.
Yeah.
So, if you haven't planted things outside yet, I'd wait. I mean, you know, if you have transplants or something.
Right. Tomatoes, for sure.
Well, I don't know that you can even get a tomato yet. It's not even mid-March yet. And even the end of March is early for tomatoes. But if you bought some, cauliflower transplants or you know, most things that they're selling now are hardy, very hardy, and hardy enough. You know, the greens or broccoli or kale, whatnot, you know, they can withstand below 30. But we'll see what the forecast might be.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Jim, we have a phone call.
Great.
Jared, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hey, good morning.
What's on your mind?
So I ended up getting a couple apple trees during that last fair. So I'm going to be picking them up Sunday. And I don't know if you'd... if you know much about Ashmead's kernel, you know about that
variety? I grow it. It's one of my favorites.
Well, I bought one of those, and I kind of did a little research. It looked like some of them were saying it needs, like, three different varieties of flowers to pollinate it. Is that
right? You know, that would be a triploid. It is generally the term that we would use if that's case here. Jim, do you know? That's not on my radar as a triploid.
No. As far as I know, Ashmead's kernel is pretty much a basic apple tree, and it does require another variety somewhere nearby for pollination, and it will pollinate back to whatever variety is nearby as well. So it's...
Okay.
That should be our...
Should be fine.
We should have triploid as one of our... Dirtbag dictionary terms, but we'll all just define it right now, and that's, or Jim can help me here too, because he's the apple expert. In that, if you have the one that I, the most common tree that I know that I remember as a triploid is Gravenstein.
Right.
So the reason that that you would need three trees, Jim, help me out here if you need to, is because the Gravenstein cannot act as a pollinizer for another tree.
Yes, that's correct. And so, if you were living out in some extremely remote location where you had miles of only fir trees around you, then you would probably, if you wanted to get fruit on everything, the Gravenstein, the pollinizer for the Gravenstein, and the one that goes along with that, you would need to have three trees. That's interesting.
So Sorry, Jim.
That's okay.
Can I ask you just which do you have a apple tree that acts as your pollinator for the Ashmead's kernel?
Well, I have about at least a dozen varieties of apples on my lot, and I think, but there's many apple trees in the neighborhood too. Do you live?
I saw that it like. There are certain like timings with the flowerings too.
Yeah. Whereabouts do you live, Jared?
I live in Beaverton.
Okay. So. I think there's going to be enough apple trees around there that you'll get fruit if it is a triploid. But I don't think that it is. So to go back to that though, if you want. Let's Jim's example here was where you're miles around away from any other apple tree. The Gravenstein is not going to provide pollen for any other tree to get pollinated. So you'll need at least one other one to pollinate the Gravenstein. But if you only have one tree, what's going to pollinate that tree? You don't have anything because the Gravenstein's not going to do it. So that's why you would need a third tree in order for everybody to get pollinated.
So do you have a recommendation, though, for maybe another apple tree I could maybe try to pick up while I'm down there if that's available? Or?
Did you say you ordered two?
I did order two.
What's the other one?
I don't know. I can't remember the
other
one.
Okay. I don't have the chart in front of me of early, late, and middle blooming cross.
Okay.
But, you know, it's just hardly seems likely that you wouldn't have some appropriate pollinizer there.
And maybe any other tips for that Ashmead's kernel, and then I'll jump off and let you move on.
Jim?
I would appreciate it.
Tips as far as what?
Well, it sounds like it was kind of maybe like fussy. I don't know. Is what they kind of kind of sounded like when they were selling it to me. I don't know.
Okay. Jim, what do you think?
You know, it's funny. I don't know. It's a no problem. You should have no problem with it. If you've got, if you're in Beaverton, I would think there's plenty of pollen. The plant will set well. We've had Ashmead's kernel here for years. It's fine. It shouldn't be an issue for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
I think it'll be good. All right. Very good. Okay. Let's go ahead and break for our second musical break, and then we'll come back and set it up. This also has to do with fava beans, and the song really doesn't have anything to do with anything. It's just the title of the album or the CD that this came from that has everything to do with it, and the CD is called Tender and Tough. So we got the nice, tender, edible fava beans, but we also have those tougher cover crop beans. Anyway, this is a nice little ditty called She Can't Say No.
Because she can't say no. You know she can't say no. It's just a two-letter word, the one she never heard. I know she can't say no. This life, it just ain't fair. No other love could compare. She said she loved me too. Can't help but make me blue. Because she can't say no. She can't say no. Only just a two-letter word, the one she never heard. I know she can't say no.
Is Rod Piazza and the Mighty Flyers. She can't say no. Okay, we'll take this phone call and then we will come back with our Garden Stumper. And remember, before we get to Jeff, remember that the Garden Stumper, now there's some stakes involved. And I'm talking about a free sharpening from a hand tool from Coley Farm Store. More on that after we talk with Jeff, was it? Yes, Jeff, good morning. You're on.
Yeah. Good morning. So my wife, Olga, and I planted some fruit trees, and including apple, and we put bone meal. First of all, we loosened up the soil for probably, I don't know, 3 feet diameter, and these are pretty small trees we put in, and probably mixed some compost in that soil and then put some bone meal in right with the tree. Did we mess up?
No. bone meal is not a problem because it's very slow acting, and it won't be a problem at all for it. I mean, the biggest problem is more with things like if you really change the soil texture, like let's say you took the soil out of the hole and you mix it half and half with compost and then put that back in, then if, depending upon the soil, you can create like a basin where water will collect because it's not draining well away so easily, and The bone meal is not like high nutritious material that will, you know, keep the roots in that spot either. So you're fine.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Good morning. I have one more question. How to keep healthy bud tree, Pansy Forest?
How to keep healthy
red bud tree.
Pansy Forest red bud. How to keep it healthy. What's the problem with it?
Yeah.
What are the symptoms that's wrong with it?
You know, it's kind of dry out branches and look very poorly, and it dry out more and more and more and kind of doesn't develop anymore. And it's young tree enough, maybe 8 years old.
8 years.
And this is there about 8 years.
Eight, yeah.
It's established.
And this is a red bud, did you say?
Yes. Yes, Pansy Forest red bud.
It's not an edible, but Jim, do you have a...
Not edible, no.
Jim, do you have an idea?
Without seeing the sight, is the plant in the sun or the shade?
No, it's on sun. All time sun.
Uh-huh. And what kind of watering regime? How often do you water it during the summer?
We keep it watered, well, sporadically, but a fair amount. I have pumped, we have ducks in a little duck pond, and I have pumped water out of the duck pond onto that tree. I don't know if it's too strong.
Well, I guess it could be possible. I mean, what would be in there? I mean, nitrogen from the duck waste?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't think it
could be, but
I don't
think
that would.
Yeah, generally we don't. I don't even know what you'd find with too much nitrogen. I don't think you'd find, you know, when there's less nitrogen, you see yellowing or late or pale leaves. With the lack of nitrogen, but what's too much nitrogen, Jim? You have any idea?
Well, only if it was like really fresh of it. Like if you used fresh chicken manure, for example, you can burn the roots.
Well, this is pretty fresh. I mean, wouldn't it be?
But it's also pretty diluted, I would think. It's, you know, just duck poop in a pond.
Well, that's true. But, you know, even if it was 30 poop to 70 water, that's still pretty good.
Is this problem you've seen with the tree recent, or has it been happening for some years?
It's some few years, last few years.
And how long have you been pumping on the duck pond water?
I did that for several years, and the tree looks beautiful in the spring. Nice blooms, and then it just sort of loses its leaves and kind of dries up, but I have quite a bit of water on it.
Well, the only thing I could say is don't put the pond water on it for a while just to see.
Okay, thank you.
And
yeah, and you know, if you're watering, you know, sometimes one of the biggest problems with a lot of plants is overwatering, but it doesn't sound like you're doing that. But a deep watering once a week should be plenty of water for it. And you know, it, you can sort of see how what happens. But of course, you know, you won't need to do that till probably May. Even thinking if it happens to get hot weather before then, I mean, there's plenty of moisture in the soil.
Yeah.
Is that tree reasonably drought tolerant and take full sun?
The full sun should be no problem for it. I don't know the plant that well to know its drought tolerance, but in you know, our interesting challenge we have here in the Pacific Northwest is that we go for many months without any issue of dryness, and then the summer comes and it stops raining, and so then after a month or so, you can start having some issues with plants that like to have more moisture around their roots. So,
yeah.
Oh.
Well,
okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, hopefully that...
I ask you one more question, please?
All right, make it quick.
Okay, how to keep down weeds in garden?
Oh.
Well, mulch. Always mulching always helps. And I've even, when I had a particularly bad weedy raised bed, I put down cardboard, and then I don't remember the order that I did this. It would be easiest if you cut holes in those to plant. In my case, I planted broccoli through the holes in the cardboard, you know, maybe 4 or 5 inches in diameter, and then mulched on top of the cardboard. And that bed has not been really weedy for since I've done that, which is probably 4 or 5 years now. So that's a possibility there. But just adding compost mulch or any type of composted material would be good, or even straw, but not woody material as a mulch.
I've seen some people put down something that looks like plastic.
Well, Jim, you could talk about what you do there with your plastic mulch, but you have to have a pretty weed-free garden to begin with, just so it'll lie down or lay down.
Yeah, so what we do here for, we had two different methods we use. One is just a thin plastic, black plastic mulch. Don't use clear plastic because it'll heat the soil up too much. Use black plastic. And you can just lay it on the surface of the soil, depending if there's not a lot of tall weeds or something, or pull those out. So the plastic will lay down. You can cover the edge with soil, and then you can just punch holes in it and put the plants in those holes. The challenge, of course, with that is you have to water the plants. And so what we do is we use drip irrigation underneath the plastic, that's how we water them. The other method we use is landscape fabric, which lasts a really long time. The black plastic I was just talking about is maybe 2 years, 2 to 3 years max. But if you use landscape fabric for more permanent plantings, that lasts a really long time, and it will allow water to go through it, so you can water on the surface. You don't need to water underneath.
But if you have a small area for gardening, personally, I think you'd be more happy with going with the organic material, just because you're changing beds, all what you're planting and different things. Where Jim's has a little bit more, commercial operation and more permanent, if you will.
Yeah, I think Glenn's your advice is good, Glenn. The cardboard and the mulch on top.
Yeah,
it works for you.
Yes. Yep. I go through a lot of cardboard.
Well,
okay.
There's a lot of it out there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
We'll start collecting cardboard.
That's
Thank
right.
You.
Okay. Thanks. Good luck. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Jim, you know what time it is?
I bet it's time for the, let's see, what is it called?
It's time for the garden stumper.
Yes.
he's got it there.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this has to do with fava beans, and there's something, unique. I don't really like to use the qualifier kind of unique, because it's unique or it's not. But it may not be completely unique, is what I'm saying, or getting at, because I don't know this. But there is something unique about the fava beans. And that is the origin and the where they grow wild. And I would like to know what is unique about those origins, if you will. Okay? If you know the answer to that and want to get a hand tool sharpened at Coley Farm Store, which is at 4209 Northeast Alberta Street, you can give us a call, 503-231-8187. The hand tools include pruners, loppers, shears, shovels, hose. Probably could expand on that a little bit, but it is a hand tool. Free sharpening. So give us a call, 503-231-8187. Okay, let's see here. I'm out of time. I do want to mention what's annoying me this month. Just got to get it off this check. Get it off my chest. Yes.
I was hoping we could talk during a music break. But one thing I'd like to just mention briefly too is also about pruning.
Oh yeah,
because it's still something that we're doing.
You bet. So we'll get to that right after what's annoying me. And this is, okay. And I'm probably ill-informed here, and this is not necessarily annoying. It's just, it's puzzling to me why in my neighborhood, and I've seen it elsewhere too, that the city is doing new curb cuts on old curb cuts. You know, they already have some curb cuts there at you know, for crosswalks, but they're redoing those, and I'm assuming that the old ones are maybe not up to the current code or something like that. But in my kind of efficiency world, I would say, well, why don't we do new curb cuts where there aren't any curb cuts first? And so I'm sure somebody out there knows the reason for that. But so it's not annoying me. It's just I'm just puzzled by that. Okay. I might take some grief on this one, but.
Well, I have to say something. You know, Glenn, one of my probably the worst thing that's happening to me because of old age, so to speak,
yeah,
is vision, and my eyesight's bad, and honestly, I guess you would call it curb cuts, you know, the intersections where they have the yellow square,
yeah,
and
uh-huh,
and they move the curb down. I really like that. It really makes my life easier, and I don't know if they did it. You know,
yeah, I'm not complaining about curb cuts in the least. Yeah. I'm just thinking they're great. I'm just thinking that since there's limited budgets, and maybe there isn't, maybe they're going to do them all. But if they are going to do them all, then they should start where there aren't any. That just seems my uninformed mind here. So anyway, but that's good feedback on your part that these things are very helpful.
They are. I love it.
Yep. Okay, yes, it's still time to prune. In fact, I've done some of that recently. And, you know, Jim, would you say we're, you know, where are we kind of in past years? Where are we with our pruning or our weather schedule now? I mean, it seemed like it was a little early, but it really hasn't been warm or, you know, unreasonably hot. Or, you know, we've had 62, I think, is the highest that we've had so far.
Yeah, I was talking with a friend in Italy recently, and everything is all leafed out there. So you know, I would say we're pretty normal. I was this year. I'm doing something different, something that I have never done before, because we have this apricot variety trial that we're working on, and it's really very, very interesting. So every week I go out and I record the flowering, which plants are flowering, mm-hmm, which ones aren't, and so forth. And it's, you know, it's very interesting. A couple of things I wanted to mention. We prune different plants at different times. So during rainy weather, we can prune, but we don't prune our peaches or our almonds or any of the prunus plants during rainy weather. We wait for weather like we've just had, you know, where we're having sunshine, it's nice and dry, and that's primarily to prevent disease spread in those more susceptible plants. But, you know, we actually, you know, if it's not, you don't prune in pouring rain, because who wants to be out in it anyway? But, you know, plants like figs and even apples and so forth, we don't worry about it too much. If it's a lightly rainy day, we'll prune. And it's still time to do all that. In fact, I remember one of the Home Orchard Society members years ago told me, he said, time to prune is when your pruners are sharp.
Yeah, I've used that line too, and that's more important to have a nice clean cut than the timing.
Yep.
A couple of questions came to mind, Jim, when you were mentioning that there in your in your apricot experiment, and I'm assuming that you have many or several varieties of apricots.
100.
Okay, that counts as many then. what is the What's the spread generally of the earliest bloomers to the late bloomers?
Well, we had some blooming in full bloom probably 2 weeks ago. That's not a good characteristic, as we were just talking about this cold weather. The later bloom is better, and we have some that have so far shown no sign of blooming. I mean, the flower buds are still quite dormant. So there's a significant spread, and many years ago, we were able to import some varieties from the former Soviet Union, and they were known for their late blooming, and they're showing that. I mean, they're definitely late, and you know, in one way you like to see all those flowers and it's all exciting to see it, but then if you get temperatures into the down below about 28 degrees, 27 degrees, it's very dangerous for them to freeze them. So there'll be more. There'll be I'll report as this goes on. It's very fascinating.
Yes.
Actually, to do this, you know?
So some have been blooming for 2 weeks, and some haven't bloomed at all yet. So it's probably going to be at least a 3 week spread. It could be a month and a half.
Yeah, it'll be more than 3 weeks. It looks to me like it's going to be at least a month between the early and the late ones, and probably more than that.
So let's hope those late ones taste good. Oh, they will. They're an apricot.
Yeah, I know. You know, the first criteria in our project is survival.
Yes.
And then the second is the fruit. So I had a very interesting experience too, Glenn. I'm not sure how much time we have, but I was in Utah a couple of weeks ago, and Lorraine and I found ripe apricots for sale from New Zealand. fascinating, actually, because the equivalent month in New Zealand would be early September in New Zealand, and apricots ripen in June. So we know there's a special mutation there that we're very interested in of apricots that allowed them to stay on the tree and be ripe much later than normal.
Did you taste them?
Yeah, we did. I actually bought all they had.
were they were good?
They're okay.
Okay.
They weren't
okay.
Wonderful, right. but they were good. I mean, certainly much better than the ones you normally buy in the stores here. You know, the hard, unripe ones with no flavor.
Okay.
So,
yeah,
much better than that.
All right. The other question that I have for you is when you're pruning in the rain, so that might be, you know, apple or pear or whatever. Do you and your workers disinfect between cuts or between trees or at all?
Yes. And again, I should qualify that statement about pruning in the rain. I mean, it's more like, you know, in sort of damp weather. We don't prune when it's raining hard.
Okay. Well, even when it's damp or even not, do you disinfect?
On trees that we're concerned about having some potential issues, there's a soap called Dreft. That's not it, Lorraine? No. Okay. Well, at any rate, we have used a soap material that we dilute and paint on the pruning cut after we prune.
Oh, yes. Okay. But you don't do anything necessary to your pruners?
No.
Okay. Because sometimes that's comes recommended.
Yeah, it depends. You know, it would depend upon the susceptibility of the plants, but the ones I was talking about, for us, We generally just prune them, and again, we're not talking about pouring rain. We're just saying damp weather.
So. Well, just the you know, master gardener training and just others' recommendations are, you know, you can spread disease from tree to tree. So when you move from tree to tree pruning, you know, disinfect your pruners.
Yeah,
but you don't. Yeah,
not generally. No.
Generally, okay. All right. Well, we've got some calls here, and I don't know if they're a question or an answer, but David's on the line. You got a question or an answer?
I have a question.
Okay, David, go for it.
The question is, I planted some lavender plants last fall, and they were probably, you know, pretty small to medium size starts, and what can I do to give them some energy for this spring to help their development?
Well, you know, I think balanced fertilizer wouldn't hurt them. One of the do you use these culinarily?
No, I do not.
Okay. Well, then a balanced fertilizer would be good, just to get them. You know, just
and
make
is that
sure
a powder or do I turn that to a liquid?
You could use powder. I mean, it's just a balanced fertilizer. Organic would make sure that the nutrients aren't washed away or otherwise. And maybe some compost around it, organic matter. Scratch the fertilizer into the surface of the soil and then put an inch or two of compost around it. It'll be happy for the next year.
Awesome. Well, thanks. You guys have a great show.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Any more? No. We still looking for an answer for what's unique about the where fava beans grow wild, you know, in its origin. 231-503-231-8187. I can mention that I'm also, that this is the time really to get serious about seed starting inside if you are going to be growing tomatoes and peppers and eggplants from seed. Get them started. I started some tomatoes and other things, but I still have a few more to do, and I'm going to do that this week because we want those big and robust before they get outside. We talked last month about where to put them if you don't have a greenhouse, and it's tougher, but just make sure that the plant is not just, if you have it in a windowsill, you know, make sure that you're turning it regularly, that it gets, you brush it occasionally, if you will, just to stress the stem so it doesn't become a little wussy plant. Some people would have fans going or something like that. So don't delay on that. Let's see. Anything else from you, Jim?
You know, the only thing would be traveling, which was we have these plans to travel, but as you probably can imagine, with all this publicity about this virus and with reasonable caution, we're not sure if that's going to happen or not. So we'll see. We are planning on going to Juneau, Alaska in about a week for a garden conference up there, and we're going to give some presentations and so forth, and that seems to be still beyond. Alaska seems to be kind of out of the virus range at this point.
That's a good point too.
It's pretty weird, you know, all the what's going on out there in the world.
Well, I did hear, you know, you get a lot of stories these days that the what the airlines do for their air, and it's, you know, they're not recirculating the air, and they say, you know, they have fresh air and it goes through filters and all that, and it's better than much or most maybe office air.
So that shouldn't be, but
you're sitting pretty close to people.
We recently flew to Utah back, and the planes were less than a third full, so there's a lot of people that are obviously being concerned about flying or traveling, I would think, at this point. But it's kind of frustrating, obviously. A lot of conferences and things are having to be in question now.
Okay, well, I guess that's our show for today. We can go out with our last piece of music here, which comes from, to tell you the truth, I had to do some research on this, but it comes from Pete Townsend, and he did, I'm not sure how many musicals he's done. You know, we know Tommy and Quadrophenia, but then this was a new one to me. It's called The Iron Man, the musical, and it came from a book by the same name of a British author, I think. His name is, I can't remember what his name is. But anyway, I got this off the website. And so this is one of the tunes that he wrote for it, for this musical from 1994, something like that. But it's called All Shall Be Well, which, you know, probably is what's going to happen in the end here. So, Jim, thanks a lot for coming on, even though you were on the phone line. We'll hope to see you next month.
Absolutely, Glenn. Thank you.
You bet.
Great show. Okay.
Okay, this is Glenn Andreessen. That's my story.
You can wake deep in the night.
Listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11:58 a.m. Next up, we have Jazz Lives. We appreciate your support of KBOO and encourage you to become a sustaining member of KBOO by contributing on a recurring monthly basis. Monthly membership of just a few dollars a month are easy to set up, and they provide KBOO with the most secure and stable funding to help pay our bills and keep the great music, news, and public affairs coming to you throughout the year. Monthly giving also cuts down on the number of membership drives we need to have each year. For more information on how you can become a sustaining member of KBOO, go to kboo.fm/give or give us a call at 503-231-8032. As always, we appreciate your support. Thank you.
KBOO is hiring a data coordinator. Our data coordinator supports KBOO's fundraising activities by organizing donor information, tabulating contributions and campaign totals, and maintains KBOO's database. Experience working with Donor Perfect preferred. The deadline to apply is Tuesday, March 24th, 2020. For a full job description and more information on how to apply, see our website at kboo.fm/employment. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Seven Guitars by August Wilson on Friday, March 13th from 7:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center in Portland. This play follows a strife of seven African-American men in their fight for humanity, self-understanding, and self-acceptance in the face of personal and societal ills, all while coping with the loss of a friend. Again, that's Seven Guitars by August Wilson on Friday, March 13th from 7:30 to 10 p.m. at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, 5340 North Interstate Ave in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm at the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, Oregon. Jazz Lives is here for you again on another Wednesday afternoon. My name